We're going viral!
Woo! Got them all coming
in. Oh, we're even looping on the music.
Looping it, baby.
Today. Let's go.
Bend it.
All right. So, what we're talking about is that last we checked, we had 426 views on the last episode on our YouTube channel. So this may not seem like a lot to most people, but it is 10 times the amount that we usually get. So we'll chalk that up as a win.
Let us enjoy our little success. Let us bask in the glory that is the minor success. So on that note, if you are one of the new ones from last week, it should go without saying, thanks for coming back a second week. Let everyone else that you know about us. Give us a like, subscribe, comment. What else is there? Subscribe, like, comment, feedback, all that kind of fun stuff. Hit us up on all the socials. We're quite literally on all of them that I can think of off the top of my head. Not the tickety talk, because the government's trying to shut it down. We're not there, but we're all about everything else. So give us a like and subscribe, and appreciate you giving us a listen.
Yep, we really do. And we want this to be community oriented, just like the Ultra community is. We have fun doing the show, and we want it to be interactive and fun for everyone else. So spreading the word will help us out. And all the links for our socials and our email address and everything is in the show notes on the YouTube channel and in the comment or the show notes for the podcast too. So you can find us on there. All right. Well, I will say it is safe to say now Ultra season is in full swing. There was over 40 ultras last weekend in North America. So we can't really get to all the results for all the races because we would probably lose a lot of people pretty quickly.
I'd have to pull a pillow out and take a nap like halfway through. Like, all right.
Yeah. But if any of you out there have a race that you want us to talk about or cover that we didn't mention, or any topic at all, feel free to shoot us a message and let us know. But we're gonna start to show off kind of strong today. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the hardest geezer. Okay, this guy, I will say, he's not necessarily a geezer as we know the term to be. He's 27 years old, but that's his social media personality. That's his nickname. He's from, let me see here.
He's from Sussex.
West Sussex, England. And his name is Russell Cook. And he just finished up a pretty epic run. He ran from the southern tip of Africa to the northernmost part. Okay, that is 10,130 miles, and he did it in 352 days. That's going through 16 countries. He went through rainforests, mountains, the Sahara Desert, extreme heat, cold, snowstorms, major sandstorms, just about everything you can possibly think of. And he's the first person to traverse Africa from the southernmost point to the northernmost point in under a year. I think there was somebody else that had done it over the course of a couple of years at one point.
I love the fact that it's 352, right? Not 365.
Yeah.
350. Like you said, like, it's wild to think like he set out like, all right, I want to do this in under a year. Right. Yep. And then at some point he hit a country, right, where he's like, all right, yeah, I'm on pace to make this in under a year. Like I can knock the rest of this country out in a couple of days. Like, what are we talking about? Like, it's insane.
it's hard to fathom. Just even if you were to do this in a perfect weather, you know, in mm-hmm. perfect weather on like a perfectly paved or flat gravel road or something, like if everything was perfect, this run would still be hard as hell just because of the length of it. But it wasn't easy for him. And, you know, he probably could have finished a lot quicker if he didn't have all these setbacks, but we're going to go through some of these setbacks because it is,
it's not like, even if you only know about Africa because of like the news or if you're only hearing about it by proxy, like he ran at this is the other thing that's wild is when you look at the map that he did, right? Like he went from the south and then like there's a whole bump out on the west side of Africa. He stuck along the coast. It's not like he went straight. Like he didn't do a true like south to north. He kind of went south to north, west for quite a while, and then made a big bubble back and around. Like who knows how many days he added on going west and making that round, you know, did the whole horn. You know what I mean? Like the whole west part of Africa. Okay, so there's that. And then like we're getting ready to talk about now. Some of the countries he ran through are in civil war, like, you know what I mean? Are in states of like conflict on a pretty regular basis. So yeah, it's astounding, but here's the map. Yeah. Oh, no, you're not doing it. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you can see her. Oh, it blows my mind.
Yeah. So he had to stick close to the coast. I'm guessing just because of infrastructure plus like you said the danger of some stuff going on in some of these countries, and he was affected by some of this. Okay, so and first of all, he's no stranger to doing, you know, multi-day traverses, multi-day runs and crazy events. In 2020 he broke the record for fastest marathon pulling a car.
weird.
He's done some other crazy stuff, like sitting in, like being in a box for a length of time. I don't know, just crazy stuff. But anyway,
in fairness, it was probably like a European car. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I mean, what are we really talking about? You know, was it like a 76 like Coupe de Ville or like that? You know what I mean? It wasn't some big ass like American hunk of metal. But yeah, that's crazy. Dragging a car for a marathon, that's. Jeez.
Yeah. he comes from a background where when he was like 19, he was a gambler, heavy drinker, and he was going down a bad path, and mm-hmm. and he ended up running a half marathon. It kind of changed his life. He wanted to do some good in the world, right? So this run across Africa is for charity, and he did a great job raising money for charity. They're up over 775,000 now. like pretty awesome, right? For less than a year's work. And he's donating to the Sandblast charity and the running charity, but pretty awesome. So, but let's get into some of this stuff that happened to him on this run. Okay. So when he started out, he was going to go north to south from Tunisia, which is like the northernmost tip of Africa, down to the southernmost tip of Africa, which is in Cape Town. So he couldn't start because he didn't have his visa for, was it Angola?
Angola, yeah.
Yeah, so, or Algeria. He had trouble getting a visa for Algeria. So he ended up starting in Cape Town and going north from south to north in hopes that he would get his visa in time by the time he got to Algeria.
Which I love the fact that, like, well, I hope I get it. Like you run the, I don't know, 330 days at that point, probably. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, to get all the way back up to the top, like, shit, I ain't got my ID. I don't have my visa still. It's amazing.
And there is a pretty good twist on that, or there's a pretty good story about that. We'll get to it when we get there in the timeline. But so starting out, he did have started having some minor stomach issues. I think he had food poisoning. He took a rest day on day 45 when doctors discovered blood and protein in his urine, which means that your muscles are breaking down, right? They're breaking down and discharging out of your body. And later on in Cameroon, he passed blood for 6 days. And also he had to decrease mileage big time at one point because he had back pain, like just extreme excruciating back pain. He missed 2 days to get some scans, and there was no bone damage. So, and this is what he was quoted as saying: no bone damage, so figured the only option left was to stop mincing about like a little weasel, get the strongest painkillers available, and zombie stomp road again.
I love it.
So he's just like, screw it, give me this painkillers and we're gonna get this thing done. So backing up a little bit, 50 days in, him and his crew were robbed at gunpoint in Angola.
Yeah.
Okay. These thieves stole passports, visas, cash, phones, and cameras. Basically everything they had. Right?
Yeah.
They had to halt the run for 2 weeks. They had to drive almost 1,300 miles back to Namibia for new passports and visas and get paperwork sorted out, and then drive 1,300 miles back to where they left off. So they had to drive 2,600 miles just to get new visas and passports.
Like driving across the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essentially like being in like New York and like, you know what I'm going to do? Drive to San Francisco and run. It's nuts. But like, that was Angola, right? Pretty rough. Like, not fun getting robbed at gunpoint.
No.
That's Angola. The DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, is like, hold my beer, Angola. Watch this. Like, this is nuts. Like,
you want to run with this?
Kidnapped.
Yeah.
He is kidnapped for 2 days in the DRC. What?
He lost his team because of the terrain there, and he stumbled into a rural settlement, and there was a chief. There was a chief that demanded his money, and he didn't have any cash on him. But that didn't set well with the chief. He didn't have any cash. He found himself surrounded by armed men, or they had machetes.
Yeah.
He thought they might be cannibals.
The other thing is wild is, just for folks who are listening, and maybe either A, you're listening, or B, you haven't looked this dude up yet, or you have, for whatever reason, this guy is, fairly tall. He looks like he's fairly tall. And breaking news, pretty skinny dude. All that, whatever. He is a ginger. I mean, my dude is white as white gets and is a ginger. I can't imagine when he strolled up into that settlement in Congo, and they're like, what?
There's
no way. He has a big ginger beard. The dude's amazing looking. Like, I can't wrap my head around what people thought when they saw him there.
He did say that going through some of those villages that, like, sometimes people or the kids would get freaked out because of his red hair.
His head's on fire.
But he did say on Twitter, when he was surrounded by these armed men with machetes and the chief was all upset, he said, emptied my bag to show I had nothing but half an eaten biscuit.
he
gave it to him and ran. He spent the next few hours bushwhacking through overgrown jungle paths, trying to stay off any tracks until he was far away. And then things went from bad to worse. After he realized that his support van couldn't reach the road, before these two guys showed up on a motorbike.
Put him on a bike.
That's right. They pulled up on a bike. And then he says what happens next was a 7-hour motorbike ride deeper into the jungle. In his head, he thought that was it.
Yeah.
He thought the self-proclaimed hardest geezer about to get held in a Congo gulag before being ripped apart limb by limb and eaten. Russell explained that he was later forced into a hut after being driven to a village. And like you said, Johnny, kidnapped. For 2 days. And I guess a group of men started to argue about what they should do with him. And eventually, I guess he managed to negotiate with them, and his team ended up paying a ransom. So,
dude,
unbelievable.
It's not. It's nuts. He must have had, clearly he has a sat phone on him, right? Like, he has to have a satellite phone on him.
Something.
There's no, how in the hell else do you track, how do they track him down, right? A 2-hour motorbike into the jungle, that's more likely getting places that the van's not getting.
It was actually 7-hour motorbike.
Yeah, on that, that's not,
no.
There's no way you ride 7 hours on a motorbike and you're not sore as shit and get the hell kicked out of you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is amazing. It's just,
yeah.
What's funny is, not funny, haha, but funny, weird, is the fact that we aren't even up to where he started going west, right? We're still in the southern third,
yeah,
of southern quarter of, yeah, this run.
Oh,
and
God.
If you think about it, he's already lost weeks. He's lost weeks of running time already. And we're not even a quarter away through this thing yet. So,
yeah.
I mean,
no kidding, man.
He should go back and do it again.
I would say, I mean, just being sick, peeing blood, having to drive 2,600 miles out of the way, getting all your stuff robbed at gunpoint, being kidnapped in the Congo. I mean, all this stuff. And like you said, he's about halfway through. But
yeah.
Anyway, so let's fast forward a little bit to day 278. So he gets, let's back up a little bit. I don't have notes on this, but I did see in some of the articles, because I read a lot of articles about this, and some of the articles had said that the sandstorms were just insane. He got some lab goggles and all this crazy stuff.
Sandstorm. There's an Instagram post of that. Did you see his Instagram post of his goggles?
Is it on his Instagram feed?
It is. Yeah. I went down. Yeah. If we keep scrolling through there, it's on here somewhere.
Oh, there's a map.
There's a picture of the map. Pop out of this one, and right there.
Yeah, he had two different pair of goggles. I think this is his first one, or his second one, maybe. 337.
Day 337. So, dude, I mean, at that point, he's way up. He's on the, he's
in the Sahara.
He's
in the Sahara Desert.
Just nuts.
So this Instagram video that we're looking at right now, it looks like something out of Mad Max.
100%.
He's wearing goggles. He's got his long red hair, long red beard, and it's blowing in the wind. It's nothing but sand around him and clouded out skies. And
It's really striking to me. He's running.
Yeah.
Like he's running, right? Like day 337 of running. I think he's still moving a pretty good clip.
He's pretty psyched, man. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's like 2 weeks from finishing this at that point.
Crazy.
Yeah, pretty cool. Okay. So he gets to Algeria, right? Day 278. And guess what? Still no passport or still no visa to get into Algeria. And it was a 4-day stalemate. He made one last attempt on social media. I think he put out a video or a plea for help or something. And that social media post got 11 million views.
And dang.
Yeah. It even gained the attention of Elon Musk. And the UK embassy in Algeria, the Algerian embassy for the UK, they offered him a courtesy visa on the spot. So his social media post paid off. After his 4-day stalemate, he was clear to finish out the run, go through Algeria and end up in Tunisia. And there's all kinds of videos online of him finishing up the run. There's actually quite a few people that came out to run the last like 30 miles with him.
If we want to see what the end of the race looks like, click out of this one and go to his most recent, like the one where he's saluting.
Yeah.
Toggle. One more. Hell yeah.
Okay. So,
hell yeah.
So he did have an after party organized. Okay.
Yeah.
And he finished up and he says from day one, the one thing all he could think about was this large strawberry daiquiri. Well, this picture we're looking at, if you're listening to on the podcast,
he's phenomenal.
You can tell he probably hasn't even showered yet. He's just like,
no.
Got this this giant daiquiri and his girlfriend sitting. I'm guessing it's his girlfriend. He said he was looking forward to seeing her.
Yeah.
And sitting in his lap. And he's just, you can tell he's pretty happy to be done. I can't even imagine how nice that would be to be, be done with that. But he also had a punk band, Soft Play.
Yes.
From the UK play at his after party. There was some footage I saw of like people in the pool. Jumping in,
yeah.
Like I don't know, it's crazy.
It's two pictures. One more.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. That is the most. I've never been to West Essex, UK, but knowing that, you know, knowing what I do know, and knowing that the punk scene there, that's the picture right there. Like that is awesome.
Yeah, it looks like a fun picture. Looks like a fun after party. Well, yeah. well deserved, hardest geezer. Well deserved.
Yeah. So cool.
So yeah, that was a fun story, and I had maybe seen something about it once, but I forgot about it. And then you sent me that. You sent me something on social media, and then I just did a hard deep dive over the weekend, and he was finishing on Sunday, so that was when I was reading all these articles about it. And yeah, very cool. You know, like I'm definitely curious to see what all these parts of Africa look like, but at the same time, like, I don't think I would want to put myself in all those predicaments, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, kudos to him for sticking with it and raising all that money for charity. And I mean, it's just really cool. So
we can see what all those parts of Africa look like by just going back on his Instagram page and just scrolling through. That's how we can see what all those parts look like. His Instagram is just phenomenal. Instagram is just scroll down a little bit more, Jamie.
Okay.
Wait till you want to scroll down a little bit more. Look at that picture. Well, one we just went by, scroll up the far left. Dude, that is a million-mile stare right there.
Day one. Dude,
like, that looks like – that already looks like someone's like, oh, what am I getting ready to do? What am I getting ready to do? Like, that is just – look how short his hair is, too.
This is day one.
Yeah.
So
look how short his hair or is there a thing?
That's day 18. That's his solo all-nighter in the – oh, he did have to run. He did say he ran through the night through the – I think it's through the Sahara Desert when he did the through the night. This is day – I don't know, day 294. They're dumping a bunch of energy drinks into his mouth. Oh, shoot. I accidentally went forward too much.
There you go.
There's day 60. His hair's starting to grow. And then day 108 – he's
looking miserable.
Says one of the most emotionally challenging periods of the project. Day 142, regaining optimism. And day 186, this is now a way of life.
236 is amazing.
236, body physically deteriorating. He just looks like... He looks like he went rounds with Mike Tyson or something.
Just looks like he looks like a wolf chewed him up and shit him up. Like he looks gnarly.
That's a really good way to put it.
Gnarly boy.
And then 247, Merry Christmas. And 290, his hair is like getting pretty long there.
Yeah. So. I mean, you can see in his cheekbones. You know what I mean? Like, you can really see in his cheekbones. Dude, it's
I can't even imagine the exhaustion.
No. I will spend countless hours over the next few days just scrolling through this Instagram. I mean, there's just so much.
Yeah. Highly recommend everybody go check that out. If you don't have Instagram, there's all kinds of articles on it. So, all right.
Lincoln's account. Well, for sure, it's Lincoln's account out for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'll put his link to his Instagram account in the show notes. So, all right. Oh, and also, I don't know where I found this graphic. It was in one of the articles, but let me pull this up real quick here.
From the show notes.
Okay, so I'm gonna blow this up a little bit. So this is the map of where he ran, and it kind of shows step by step along the way of where he encountered issues and things like that. It shows it on the map, so it's kind of a cool shot to just kind of see where everything happened. So
there's no way we can even cover like some of the parts of this race. Like we briefly talked about it. You like quickly said he ran at night, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If we blow this map up and up by Sahara, it says ran at night to avoid 50 degrees Celsius daytime heat. Just for the Americans, just in case you're curious, 50 degrees Celsius, 122 degrees.
Oh Fahrenheit. My God.
50 degrees Celsius.
You gotta be kidding me.
Correct.
Holy moly.
Bro, if it's 122 Fahrenheit a day, even in the desert, you've been in the desert, right? We've both been in the desert.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's 122 at day, at night, it's still got to be, I mean, even if it gets cold, it's still got to be probably 60 to 80, I would think. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
what are we talking about? Like, that's insane.
Well, there were parts where it was actually extremely cold at night. I don't know I don't think it was in the Sahara, but it could have been. I don't know. But there was parts where he had snowstorms.
Yeah. I think
Algeria ran in snowstorms once he was allowed in. Because I think that gets mountainous through there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the fact that it's like, hey, welcome to Algeria. You're going to run in snow in the desert. Like, what in the F? What are we doing? Like, dude, this is just a fascinating, like massive shout out to Russ Cook.
The greatest geezer.
The hardest geezer.
Sorry.
Hardest geezer. And I mean, dude, you run something like that, it's hard not to say that you're not the hardest geezer.
Yeah.
Like, that's like show me a harder dude. Like, show me a harder, you know, like, golly days.
Yep. No doubt. All right. Let's move on then. And we're going to talk about some race results. And this first one that we're going to talk about is really awesome, because Tara Dower, she won the 29th edition of Umstead 100. She won it outright in 14 hours and 58 minutes. She's the second female in race history to crack the 15-hour mark. Tara is a tough chick. I mean, yeah. She's the one that, and when we did the Keep Trail Running Weird Awards, when we talked about Ultra Signups Keep Trail Running Weird Awards, she, in one of her races, fell into a cactus.
Yeah.
That just looked brutal, but no, like, super awesome. She won it outright. You know, Umstead is one of those classic races, North Carolina. So it's an incredible accomplishment for her. Jim Sweeney got second overall, first male in 15 hours and 23 minutes. So congrats to Tara and Jim. Also, American River 50 was over the weekend, and this is another iconic 50 miler. It's been going on since 1980. So, I mean, it's almost as old as Western States. And it's kind of in that same area, sort of, you know, just southwest of Auburn. It's in like Folsom, California, Sacramento area. I think it actually goes up to Auburn or towards Auburn, but there's usually, I mean, in the past, I think there's been up to like 600 people in that race, but there was 289 this year, and Jason Hefner finished first in 6 hours and 46 minutes, and the women's race, Kat Seba, took the win 8 hours and 40 minutes.
This might be this is a question I'm getting ready to ask. I feel like I should definitely know. And I just, American River 50, right? The river crossing. Why am I drawing a blank? What are the river crossings you do at Western States?
Well, the big one is Rocky Chuck.
Rocky, good God. I could not. I have a picture of that stupid thing. I could not come up with it. Yeah. Golly, yeah. Days. But I, man, like, I, that does, like, you, because you're talking about how close this is to Auburn.
Like, yeah.
Which ringing, like, I feel like American River is, like, somehow.
Well, that is the American River that runs through Auburn. That's the river that you, Rocky Chuck is like the campground.
So the American River is the river at Rocky Chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
I was like, why?
That's the tie-in.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, why is this? Like, why does that? I knew. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So it's one of those classic races, and I have no excuse. I need to get out and do it. You know, it's not too far for me, less than 2 hour drive. So, also Brazos Bend. 50 mile and 50K were over the weekend. In the 50 mile race, there were 150 finishers. Art Hurtado won in 6 hours and 21 minutes. In the women's race, Martina Dujic secured the win in 7 hours and 5 minutes. And the 50K winners
this is the news right here. This is the thing right here. Like, this is cool.
Husband and wife, Zach Bitter, first place, 3 hours, 19 minutes. Nicole Bitter, first place, 3 hours and 55 minutes. So,
by the way, blistering ass 50K.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, these two are both they're both elite yeah. ultra runners and husband and wife team. I don't know if, you know, there's too many other husband and wife teams that are, that can do what they do. You know, like Killian and Emily Forsberg, you know,
yeah.
They're pretty quick, but anyway, cool to see those two just tearing it up. And they recently, there was another race that we covered a couple episodes ago where I think Nicole got first and Zach got second place male. So yeah. They're just tearing it up this year. Another race that happened was one of the versions of Running Up for Air. And this one was in Moab. Okay. So it was a 1.8 mile loop with 940 feet of climbing. So, and then a 12-hour race had Kyle Curtin, who he's pretty great runner. I believe he lives out in Durango. Used to live in Clarksville, Tennessee. Is friends with Ryan Pluckelman from the Adventure Jogger mm-hmm. podcast. Kyle Curtin, you know, he set the FKT on the Tahoe Rim Trail at one point. So he's a real strong runner. And Kaylee Knowles also got first in the 12-hour. And Mike McMonagall, another kind of name that's familiar, and Stacey Dorius won the 6-hour race. Griffin Briley and Leah Yingling took home the 3-hour race. And Leigh Yingling, just, you know, she's coming off of that Lululemon 6-day event where she put down quite a few miles. So,
she did that with
Camille. Camille. And there was, I think, like 10 ladies that did that event. You should go back and watch the episode when you were when you were in the basement from the tornado, because I covered it. So
that looked like a really cool event. Watching that's really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat to see everything that went down there. Also, Bull Run Run, which is a classic East Coast race in Clifton, Virginia. It's a 50 miler, 30th edition of Bull Run Run. 200 runners started. The race recognizes Civil War battles that happened in the area. And less than 2 minutes separated Brandon Fogarty and Linford Fritz at the finish. But Fogarty won in time of 7 hours and 30 minutes. And
by the way, this is one of the ways that you know that ultra season is in full swing. There's been two races today, East Coasters, right? Like you've had, you know that the weather's getting nice when you can start getting the runs in on the East. Yeah, you had Olmsted and Bull Run Run. So, it's a beautiful thing, you know. You're not freezing to death.
Yep, races north, east of the Mississippi and north of Florida are
starting to happen.
Yeah, and then for the women's race in Bull Run Run was also close. Nora Jodry won in 8 hours and 12 minutes, and she edged out Steph Hill by 4 minutes. So, all right, and last race we want to talk about is this race that I had never heard of, but our friend of the pod, Charlotte, better known as Costume Chick, she reached out on Instagram to let us know about that race. And so it's a country mile. It's a 48-hour race. It takes place around a 4.167-mile loop on a farm. I think there's 75 feet of gain per lap, so relatively flat on like dirt path. And it's basically how many loops you can do in 48 hours. And they do have huge dinner plate size buckles for anybody that reaches 100. And Costume Chick dressed up like like a piece of corn for for the country mile. You know, another great costume. And
handmade.
Yeah.
Handmade.
Oh, costume. Every costume she does is handmade. Yeah. It's quite impressive. And also I gotta share this. She sent us a picture.
Yeah, of the buckle or the
She sent us a picture of her and AF Marathon.
Oh yeah.
Eric Brumbelow, who likes to take pictures of himself in porta potties. calls it Brumbelowing. There's a picture of Charlotte and Eric Brumbelowing in a port-a-john.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
It is super cool.
Friends of the pod.
It is funny because she sent the one picture of the buckle or like
yeah, it's
absolutely freaky huge. There it is.
Let me zoom in.
It's maybe
there it is.
Yeah, that thing is massive. It might be the second biggest award that I know about. Like that one's really big. And there's a 50 miler. There's a 50 miler in Michigan.
Oh, that North Country.
Out, yes. They give out effing saws.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, for those of you listening, you can't see how big. They're big. I mean, they're big, big.
Yeah.
John Flores went up and did that race.
Right.
And,
right.
He admitted, he wanted to go do it because it's a 50 miler, but also like that's a really dope ass finishing award. But this is like gotta be one of the biggest ones I've seen. I think it's huge.
I
want to see someone wear that. If it's I want to see that buckle on somebody.
Yeah. That would be awesome. You strolling into a meeting or something like
would be amazing.
Isn't Yeti, don't they have a big buckle too?
Yeti's got big I feel like Yeti's got an okay size one, but also I feel like, it's been a while since Ronnie has one, and it's been a while since I've seen him wear it. Doesn't Grindstone have a pretty notoriously big one?
Maybe. I know Burning River's buckle is
Burning River's buckle is huge.
It's pretty good size. I have one. It's like,
they give it to you on a lanyard, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, isn't it like, yeah, it's not even like a buckle, but I mean, it's a buckle, but it's like giving to you on a lanyard.
It's not what I'm wearing. I mean, I do wear some of my buckles, but not that one. It's just too big, but it's cool anyway.
Yeah. If I rock a buckle, I got to keep it old school and I just go with my Mo. I take it back to like day one and I rock the Mo one.
Mohican has like the coolest buckle ever.
It's so detailed. It's so well done. Like all the little stuff that's in it. It's so intricate. I love that buckle. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's really cool. So anyway, Charlotte got in 105, I think a little over 105 miles, and AF Marathoner, he put in 52 and some change. So congrats to them.
Good times.
All right. Let's move into some news. You know what? First thing we're going to talk about is another hardest geezer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who just started his, I think it's at least his second TransCon, his second walk across America, and that's Lazarus Lake, the guy that puts on Barkley, Gary Cantrell. So on April 1st, April Fool's Day, he started his second walk across America. His other one was in 2018, and that's the one where I ran into him by total chance in the middle of nowhere, Idaho. We were on our way to a wedding in the Tetons, and my wife Jessica's like, I think that was that guy, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's Laz. Let's turn around. And I got that picture with him. And so this time, and then at that time, he went kind of a northern, more northern route. He went through the Tetons Pass, and he ended up in Oregon. This time, he's starting in Delaware, and let's see here. He's going a 150-day trek from Delaware to San Francisco, so he's going to be coming to town, to my neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely keep an eye out and see when he's going to be strolling through here, and maybe walk with him his last couple miles or something. That'd be kind of cool. He's 69 years old, by the way, and he started by dipping his toes in the Atlantic Ocean, and he's aiming to do the same into the Pacific after about 3,000 miles. And Jared Beasley is crewing him for the first 2 weeks, maybe. For a couple weeks early on. And Laz is battling a blockage in his femoral artery and multiple other health issues, but he is determined to make it to San Francisco. I would say, and Laz, you know, he has over a couple hundred thousand lifetime running miles. He's, you know, was hardcore throughout mm-hmm. his running days. I have no doubt that he will make it. He's a determined guy. So, forecast. Okay. First full day, the luck could not be better. It did as forecast, rain, cats and dogs all day, just north of them. They didn't get a drop. So, So this article, and I'll link this in the show notes, is from run247.com, and it talks about this a little bit. And this is something that's kind of cool that Laz wrote about his LazCon. He says, half a year in another world, the real world, no Trumpers, no Wokers, just people. Helpful, friendly, encouraging, supportive people. We will walk together and talk together and sometimes sit and eat together. And afterwards, someone will tell me, I'm really glad we got to meet those folks. From everything I've heard, they are some kind of monsters, but they are good people. They are just good people. Yes, just like you and me. So that's what's cool about Laz. Like, you know, he's just like he's this very level-headed guy, even though he's kind of out there, but he's mm-hmm. really a mastermind, like the races he's created. And we've talked about that at length in our other episodes. So, check out his route and see if maybe he'll be coming through your area. He always likes company. So if he's coming through your area, and you can follow along on hashtag LazCon on Twitter or just by Googling LazCon, there's ways to track his progress. And Johnny, didn't you mention something about maybe we'll start updating our social media?
Yeah, we're gonna start making sure that we tweet out and kind of track him, you know, like anything that like you had mentioned, he has a crew out there with him this year. So if we see anything getting posted by Jared, make sure we, you know, retweet or whatever it may be, anything that Jared puts out there. Cause like we said, he's the crew that's going out there. But I did just see the most recent thing from Jared was about an hour ago. Yeah. It's that tweet right there. And so day 10 looks like everything's going pretty well. He's got a bracelet. So, yeah, we'll tweet these out more often. Might get the tracking started with a tweet that is from that run 247, and then we'll put the hashtag on it just so everyone else that comes across our tweets can go back and find it pretty easy. But yeah, we'll send out some updates on a regular basis. Make sure so the Twitter, the Instagram, Threads, all that kind of stuff. So. Just because it is a really cool. I mean, this guy is, I mean, he's such a major part of what ultra running is in the U.S. now. So, and not now, but has been for decades. So yep. he 100% deserves and warrants the respect from every single person that's doing anything in the ultra world. So if you have any say, any voice, anything in the ultra world, like Laz 100% deserves, you know, your utmost respect. So we will for sure start tracking and sending stuff out just so everyone can kind of keep track of it.
Yep, absolutely. And if you are on X or Twitter or whatever it's called now, the hashtag LazCon Twitter feed is pretty awesome. Like, here's mile 199. He's sitting on a bench and he's like smoking a cigarette.
That's awesome. I know. I love it, man. Yeah.
And here's him walking by the state capitol. Yeah. So here's Laz helping a lady fix her flat tire. That's such a Laz thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to that quote he's talking about, right? Like, everything aside, just be a good person. Like, I really enjoyed that person.
Yep. So super cool. More to come on that. All right. So let's see. Okay. And the next story we're going to talk about is a little bit of Western States news. It's they've come out with a new anti-doping policy, and it's kind of hard to believe that, you know, and like, I know that some of the bigger races have been drug testing for a couple of years now, and it's kind of hard to believe that ultra running, well, maybe it's not so hard to believe, but, you know, ultra running is in a place where, you know, we have to make rules about doping and things like that. It just goes to show like how much it's really grown since, you know, 2012 when I did my first ultra. And you know, people that were doing ultras in the late 70s, early 80s, this is probably completely foreign to them, but but yeah, so there is a new anti-doping policy, and it's part of their commitment to clean sport. They've partnered with the USADA, that's the United States Anti-Doping Agency, to provide anti-doping services at the Western States 100. And that includes sample collection and analysis services, results management, adjudication, and sanctions management. So the entry rules are: any athlete that's been found to have committed a doping offense at any competition or out of competition by World Athletics, World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, that's the USADA, or any national sports federation shall be ineligible to enter the run during the period of their ineligibility from competition. And any athlete who has been subject to ban from competition of 3 months or more by one of the above mentioned federations or agencies shall be ineligible to enter the run unless otherwise agreed to by Western States Endurance Runs. Western States reserves the right to select any entrant for testing. The goal is going to be to test athletes, the elite athletes, men and women's field, including top age group competitors. Anyone selected for testing will be subject to post-race urine and or blood testing and may be subject to additional follow-up testing for up to 90 days. USADA responsible for collection. So there's a whole list of prohibited substances. It's the WADA prohibited list. So if you are elite and you're going to be running in Western States, or, you know, just to be safe, anybody that's running in Western States should probably go here and check out the WADA list and make sure you don't have any medications on it or anything like that, because you can get a therapeutic use exemption if one of your medications is on there. And yeah, so anyways, this is kind of breaking news. So I just wanted to share that with everybody, just so they're in the know. And I know Western States has done drug testing for at least the last seven years or so, but this is kind of becoming even more official. I think there wasn't there some controversy, like Lance Armstrong was going to paced somebody at Western States, and they didn't let him do it, or there was something like that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that, and maybe we can comment it on the next
episode. Lance Armstrong, man, it's been years since I heard his name. It's kind of one of those weird things, like so famous, and like you almost kind of forget about the guy.
Yeah, so he got into ultra running a little bit. But I think his doping ban was hurting him from getting into some events or something. I might be totally messing this up, but anyways, I think he maybe competed in a mountain biking event at Leadville too. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up too. Anyway, all right. Last thing we're gonna go over today is John Kelly, one of the Barkley finishers. John Kelly, in addition to being a phenomenal ultra runner, just a beast of an ultra runner. He's also a really great rider, and he, I don't know how he does this all. I don't know how he does a full-time job. I think he runs his own company. He's, a great ultra runner. He sets FKTs, all this stuff. And on top of that, I think he has four kids and, a family. So I don't really know how he does all this stuff, but he is a great rider on his social media posts and everything. They're always great to look at. But so John Kelly, he gave on Twitter some of his thoughts about why there were so many finishers this year. And he's saying not intentionally being a smartass, but well, it's because there were so many finishers. And what he means by that is that they worked together, right? He said, had we all been working alone, there might have been 1 to 2 finishers, if even that. Loops 2 and 4, they were mostly in 2 lead groups. One had him, and he's had experience 22 prior loops. And Jared Campbell, who had 25 prior loops to this year. And then Greg and Jasmine, 6 loops each prior to this year. And Damien had 4. So everyone was a solid navigator. Jasmine in particular seemed to instinctively know things, which that's
crazy.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. Because you can tell she was time-wise, she never should have made it, but but she instinctively knew where to go, even though she was completely out of it. So that just even makes her finish even all the more awesome. And he says there's benefit to everyone, even him. This year, he was more of the fixer than the guide, ensuring that no small mistakes became disastrous. They made quite a few. And yes, little things can kill, but one big mistake could have outweighed all of our small ones. Yeah, I mean, you're talking, most of them finished within a half hour of cutoff, right? So...
Oh, less than that. No, way less than that.
So he's right. One little mistake is going to end it. Or, one major mistake is going to pretty much, blow up your chances. He says he also gets more from seeing a finish from Jasmine, Ihor, and Greg. He's got his finish, so there's marginal value to more. And you don't get to the top and stay there by knocking everyone else down, pulling them up with you. Then when you inevitably slip, they're right there to catch you. He says this was the second year in a row with fantastic Barkley conditions. We talked a little bit about that. Last year, slightly too cold. This year, slightly too warm. But neither with the heavy rain or dense fog that increased the likelihood of those race-ending mistakes. So weather plays a huge part. And then start time was perfect. 5 to 8 a.m. is his ideal window. Good sleep, light by the time you need it. Guaranteed daylight finish. No loops of near total darkness.
The other thing that one comment does guarantees it never starts that time again. that'll be the last time Laz lights a cigarette at that time, right?
Dude, I guarantee you the next cigarette's gonna be lit at like 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, you dude. Know. I mean, he's saying a perfect start time is between 5 and 8 a.m. Laz, like, let me just light this heater at like 6 o'clock p.m.
I got something going. Get that conch shell at 11:15 p.m.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure I mention that to Laz when I see him in San Francisco. Hey, John said the start time was pretty ideal. Okay, so he goes on to say course changes were significant but difficult to quantify. Removed one of his least favorite sections, replaced it with his new least favorites, briars, blowdowns, cliffs, no clear path, an absolute mess. I wonder if that has to be that rusty spoon.
Yeah.
There was 2 books added, even if no new distance, that adds 10 minutes because of 2 new books. Is 5 finishers too many? Will the course get much harder next year? He doesn't think so. Everything perfectly aligned this year, and none of the finishes were by a huge margin. Next year, probably worse start time.
There it is.
Worse weather, and not as many strong veterans up front.
Yeah.
Some people catch lightning in a bottle. And congrats, Ihor and Aurelian. Aurelian was one of the finishers last year. By the most of the time, people have to keep at it until they get lucky. Lucky conditions, Greg, Jasmine, and Carl. There were 0 finishers 2018 to 2022. He says the harder he works, the luckier he gets. So
that's an old saying right there too, right? Like there's an old saying that is like very like I can't think of what it is, but there's an old school saying that goes right hand in hand with that. I'll have to try to look it up and see if I can come up with what it is.
Yeah. And then the last thing he says is the goal 1% of attempts finish, 1% of participants, i.e. Jared, I don't count this year, or 1% of qualified applicants could finish. He really doesn't know. Seems if 1% can finish, that 1% is selected and everyone finishes, that's actually the right difficulty. So it's great thoughts from a true insider, John Kelly, 3 Barkley finishes, super smart ultra runner, knows how to deal with the pain cave. He's no stranger to multi-day events like spine race and all that. So
you know what, one comment kind of jumped out at me, and I'm probably looking too far into this, but I'm gonna plant a seed in everybody's minds right here, right now. There is one comment in there that I was like, huh, and it's this. Everything perfectly aligned this year, and none of the finishers were by huge margin. And here it comes. Next year, probably worse start time, worse weather, and here it comes. This is the part that I'm like, what does he mean? And not as many strong veterans up front. What does that mean? is he kind of sitting and when he says, and not as many strong veterans up front, is he saying that, I'm good for next year? Does he know? You know what I mean?
I think if you finish, you get an automatic entry, but maybe he knows something we don't.
The other thing that caught my eye, like we talked about how, like, oh, he made that comment about 5 to 8 being a perfect start time. And we joked about how, Laz will change the start time. And then John even said it too. The other thing that caught my eye was in like the second tweet in this thread, he talks about there being 2 strong lead groups, and each group had a strong veteran with them, right? One had him and the other one had Jared, right? All right. So is that's going to do something to where like every single loop is alternating now? Like every single person is going a different direction. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, cause
that's,
you know,
that's a good call out, man.
Like that, like what, cause like if, you know, like I'm one, like in my head, I'm like, how much does Laz go back and like read these kind of tweets? Does he, I mean, shit, he might not, but if he goes back and he uses these kind of tweets and like this kind of breakdown to then make the next year a little, you know, little tweaks a little here and there. Like, could you imagine how hard this race gets if every, like, okay, loop one, fine. Everyone runs together in loop one.
Yeah.
But then as you come into loop two, what way, what, yeah, first person leaves, what way do you want to go? All right, you want to go that way? Great. Two that way, three that way, four that way. Five. And then, this, and then you come back in. Yeah. And like, you keep doing that. Like,
That would add a whole nother level of difficulty,
Another level of chaos and difficulty.
Yeah,
like, so, you'd have dudes, people bumping into one another in the middle of the night, like, what the fuck, where are you going?
Yeah, so one person that does follow Twitter is Keith Dunn, right? And he's got Laz's ear, so I'm sure this kind of stuff will trickle to Laz if he hasn't seen it. He's got a lot of time to hear people tell him stuff too on the, in his 150 day trek across the America. So
yeah.
But all right, well, good episode. Do you have anything else to add, Johnny?
I don't. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, I appreciate all the new listeners. And if you've stuck with us through the whole episode, you're still listening, I will reiterate. Let other folks know about us. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Subscribe, comment, rate us, all that kind of fun stuff. But most importantly, enjoy it. You know, have a conversation with us in the comments. For the people who do reach out to us, you know, like, they can attest to it. We try to be interactive as much as possible. Try to have this be a fun community based thing. So. I love everything that's going on so far, and I'm looking forward to, you know, keeping the ball rolling.
Yeah, a lot of fun. So, all right. Well,
cool.
We'll see everybody on the next one. I'm going to take us out.
Have a good one.